This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. While Senate Republicans take a step back and try to figure out what they're going to do with their health care bill, it might be instructive to understand how we got here. Here being a system where most Americans get their health insurance through their employers, while at the same time, there are millions of people stuck outside that system. From the Health Desk at WHYY, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports.
Our story starts by the fire. It's October 1942. In this fireside chat, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt describes a growing war.
With every passing week, the war increases in scope and intensity. That is true in Europe, in Africa, in Asia, and on all the seas.
At home, there's also a battle for workers. So many men are abroad that businesses are desperate for employees. And NYU Dean Sherry Gleed says they're willing to pay.
Remember, you're coming out of the Depression. All of a sudden, hiring ramps up, and wages start to climb, and prices start to climb, and all of a sudden, we start to see major inflation happening in the U.S. economy.
In that October chat, the president makes the case. Economic sacrifices at home are needed as much as any new tank.
We shall be compelled to stop workers from moving from one war job to another as a matter of personal preference. To stop employers from stealing labor from each other.
That year, the National War Labor Board forbids employers from raising their workers' salaries, a wage cap. If our employer-sponsored insurance system has an origin story, it is this. You've got the wage cap, and the Labor Board also rules health insurance is exempt from the cap. So employers begin to dangle health insurance as a benefit to attract the best and the brightest. Plus, the IRS decides employer contributions to health insurance premiums are tax-free, which means workers pay less out of their pocket. This all happens to happen as a medical miracle unfolds. The arrival of penicillin.
Industrial monument to the miracle drug. Mass production penicillin plant at Terre Haute, Indiana, one of many where the life-saving medicine is now being manufactured wholesale.
Healthcare, before modern drugs, was fairly primitive. Now it's become something you really want.
Before the 1930s, you probably didn't want to be treated if you were a rational human being. So this is also the moment where medical care really takes off.
By 1952, just a decade after Roosevelt's fireside chat, the economy hums along. People want new Fords, the best medical care, and shiny everything. Private employer-sponsored health insurance explodes.
How many people have this important private health insurance? Only 8 million people in 1939. But in 1952, 92 million.
That's Ovetta Culp Hobby, President Dwight Eisenhower's health secretary. Hobby's pitching Eisenhower's plan to provide national insurance to the 63 million uninsured Americans. It's the third pass at getting some kind of national health plan since the end of the war, and joined most other Western nations in providing coverage for all. But Miami of Ohio economic historian Melissa Thomason says each time doctors, through their lobbying group, the American Medical Association, launch scorched earth campaigns.
Doctors have always worried that it would limit their ability to charge patients what they wanted. And they say that if health insurance is nationalized, it's likely that government won't stop there. They'll start nationalizing other industries too, and that's something that we should all be afraid of. So they use the fear factor to kill it.
That pretty much ends any attempts at national insurance. The employer-sponsored insurance becomes king. Over the decades since, presidents have taken cracks at getting coverage to people outside the employer system. Most notably, President Johnson with Medicare and Medicaid, and President Obama with Obamacare. And today, it's President Trump's turn, trying to answer a question that still lacks a good answer. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.